Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. Nice to see you, those who I see. In other words, nice to see your names on your black boxes. Okay, welcome to class 130 of our ongoing series on the Sidur. Okay, we'll hopefully finish up the bracha of Gurot, the second bracha of Shimon Esrei this week. Last week, we were focusing mainly on the issue of Tchiyat HaMetim. That's what the bracha is. We mentioned the bracha actually has two names, Gurot, the strength, and Tchiyat HaMetim, which of course, that's the manifestation, or at least one of the manifestations of God's strength is through resurrection, which is all very nice, except that, like, we've never seen that happen. You know, it's not like other strengths. It's interesting, actually, the bracha does not mention, the Exodus or creation, which are sort of the two fundamental aspects of God's, you know, power and providence. In other words, of course, the Aseret HaDibrot begins that God took us out of Egypt. It's not really a command, a statement. And the Kuzari asks right away the famous question, why doesn't the Aseret HaDibrot start God created the world? That's not our issue now. But of course, those are the two main things that, wow, God is the Yotzer Olam, Yotzer Or, Ubore Choshech, Ose Shalom, Redego. So we do, of course, mention creation. We've talked about the Exodus the whole time in the Shema, everything leading up. But, and the bracha before, it's really about creation. But it's interesting that in the bracha of Gurot, we don't mention either of those. We just, focus really on Tchiyat HaMetim, and then we'll talk a little bit more on the rain aspect, which you just alluded to last week, because it's, Mashiva Ruach, and, you know, the whole thing about that, it's very important we say it now, which we'll discuss. I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into it partially because I'm not expert enough to get into it. I don't know enough. I don't know that any, I shouldn't say that. There are people who have studied it much more, but of course the various, you know, the differences between all the sort of otherworldly, you know, rewards, if you want to call it that. So there's, of course, Tchiyat HaMetim is this bracha, but there's Olam Haba. Well, there's what exactly is the relationship between Olam Haba and Tchiyat HaMetim? And then if you want to throw in Gan Eden, what does that mean? And then, of course, is Yimot HaMashiach. So at least according to the Rambam, it's just very briefly, Yimot HaMashiach, of course, is very this worldly. As a matter of fact, you know, during, if those who remember during the first Gulf War, I think the Lubavitch Rebbe, and I'm not getting to the whole thing with the, you know, that whole messianic thing, but the idea was that, you know, democracy was on the move. Unfortunately, we see democracy is not anymore, but, there was sort of a feeling that, you know, the Iron Curtain fell and Russia and all these countries in the Eastern Bloc were becoming democratic. This was like the beginning of the messianic era. And that's very Maimonidean. Because according to the Rambam, the only difference between our world and the Messianic world is, of course, peace. I don't want to say the only difference. That's a huge difference, but nothing's going to change. The world will be normal. And, you know, for people who grew up, in the era that we were lucky to grow up in, sort of, it's, you know, changing. Like after World War II till, I don't know, 10 years ago, the world was like a very normal place, like probably the best time in world history, the most peaceful, and it's still much more peaceful than it's been historically. So that was sort of bordering on the Messianic Age, if it can say such a broad statement. Well, I'm of course, not everybody agrees with the Rambam, but that's Yimot HaMashiach. That was the whole problem with the Rambam we alluded to last week. What exactly is the Rambam's view on Tchiyas HaMetim? Because the Rambam focuses more on Olam Haba. Olam Haba is a totally spiritual world, a world we can't relate to. The Rambam talks about that in Hilchot Tshuva. He says the ultimate reward is Olam Haba. And it's a place where the tzaddikim are sitting and enjoying the divine presence and whatever that means. But, and karet, what karet means is you're cut off from Olam Haba. That's how the Rambam understands it. Tchiyas HaMetim is a resurrection. That's a physical resurrection. So we're back into this world. Presumably Tchiyas HaMetim. And then what happens? Then people probably die again. It's a little bit unclear. I don't know how Gan Eden fits into all this, but I just want to point out we have a lot of these ideas, these nice rewards, we're not clear what they are and how they interact with each other. And obviously, nobody knows, and different philosophers have different views. And the bottom line is, as I always like say, it doesn't matter. Who cares? I know that's a little bit flippant, But let's take a look. Well, this year's not a double parsha, but when it's Bahar Bechukotai, so next week we're going to read about the rewards. And what are always, 1,000 times, we say it in Shema. What's the reward for Yom Tishma? That's our bracha, v'natati matar tzichem bito. That's exactly what we're going to get to. Rain. Rain and your cattle and your, you know, you'll, and you won't miscarry and you'll have peace, of course. V'natati shalom bar tzichem. So all the blessings in the Torah, first of all, are material, are material blessings. For whatever reason, whether the people who got the Torah couldn't relate to it, whether we understand it much better, but the bottom line is the Torah is very, I've said many, many times, the Torah is very this world interested. The Torah is not really concerned with the world. That's not our job. Don't worry. And we know there are lots of stories with Gadol Yisrael. People say, when the Mashiach coming? They're dumb. He's not coming this year. Don't worry about it. That's not our concern. As we pointed out, the Rambam says, don't worry about it until it happens. And then we'll know what it means. So anyways, I just wanted to point it out. And it is hard. We mentioned last week, we talk all the time on Chiyas HaMeitim. It's really a great statement of faith. And to fully, you know, we say a lot of things, but to fully appreciate it is very hard, very hard. The second part, which we'll talk about a little bit more now, is Mashiv HaRuach Murid HaGeshem. That's the only reference to rain. But it's very, rain is Chiyas HaMeitim. That I think we did discuss last week. Nature dies every winter. It's like dead. And then the rain brings it back to life. Water is this everything of life. So there is a lot of parallels between water and Chiyas HaMeitim. And it's also interesting, you know, water, scientists cannot predict rain like more than, I don't know, 5 days in a week in advance, maybe 2 weeks in advance. And they're wrong. I don't know. They're right most of the time. You know, people like to make fun of the other man, but they're usually right. They usually are right. But, it's an amazing thing. We know the next eclipse. People already asked us, you know, please go. We're planning a Jewish history trip to Spain this summer, you know, we already got a couple requests. Can you do a trip to Spain in 2026? Because in August 2026, the next eclipse, you know, the big eclipse that they had on, what was it, April 8th, I guess, right? So there's going to be one. Say, we know 5,000 years in advance when the next eclipse is going to be, when the next comet is going to show up.
The next one will be in Iceland, not in Spain.
Right, but the one in Europe, in other words, there's going to be one in Spain in 2026. We're doing a trip to Spain in 2024. Let's do a trip. People ask us, why don't you do a trip to Spain in 2026 so we can see the eclipse? Or not see the eclipse, whatever, I guess, not see the sun, or whatever it is. But it's an amazing thing that we can predict all these things, hundreds and thousands of years. Even the ancients knew how to predict a lot of these things. They say that's how Columbus, when we were in Portugal last year, right? There's a whole story now, if I remember correctly. Columbus was, they were going to kill him, and he knew there was an eclipse coming or something. I don't remember the whole story, and he told them, and they didn't understand, and he predicted it, and they said, oh my God, he's very, you know, powerful, because they knew, the ancient navigators had to know these things. And it's, you know, some of the science of, you know, the Egyptians and the Greek, we still don't know how the Egyptians built the pyramids. They were in certain areas, they were more advanced than we are. But anyways, I'm just pointing out, but water, we cannot predict when water is going to come. I guess the same thing, earthquakes. There are certain things we don't know. And, you know, I guess they represent the power of God. There was a whole discussion, and I don't understand really why, but I know why, but, whether you should say a bracha on the eclipse. And, I think the standard poskim said not to say a bracha on the eclipse. Some say we should say, naturally you think you should say a bracha. The ninth chapter in Brachot, in the Mishnah Brachot, talks about all the brachot we make that aren't part of our davening, Birchan HaMazon or Shema. That's the first eight chapters. Our Kriyat Shema, Amida, the Shmon Esrei, and Birchan HaMazon. Those are the first eight chapters of Masechet Brachot talk about that. The ninth chapter talks about if you see a place where miracles were done, that's how it begins to the Jewish people. And what brachot do you make on earthquakes, hurricanes, the mountains, the deserts, if you inherit a lot of money, when somebody passes away, Baruch Dayan Amet. So all those extra, you buy new clothes, you know, all those brachas, Shechayanu, Tov Emetiv, they're all Osa Maseh Breshit, Ok Shechukol Gvurato Malei Olam. But there's no bracha listed for an eclipse. And the reason is because I think the Gemara said that an eclipse is bad. Because probably, I don't want to get into trouble here, but probably because they didn't understand. In other words, when the sun is a symbol of all life. So when the sun is covered, they, I think Gemara says it's a siman ra, lolam. But, I don't know. I think an earthquake is much worse for the world than an eclipse. So that's why there were people who said you should say, a bracha, despite the fact that the Gemara seems to say you don't say bracha on an eclipse, maybe a different type of, I don't know. But anyways, we do say brachot on God's manifestation in nature, even when it's not great. And the bracha on an earthquake is not Dayana Emet. The bracha on an earthquake is Shokocho v'gruoto malei olam, that God's mastery is, power fills the world. And, I know I'm, if anybody has any insight into that, I really don't understand why Chazal did establish a bracha for, you know, earthquakes, hurricanes. These are not things we want. They're not good things. I don't think they're good things ever, even if nobody is killed in them. But I don't know. If somebody has an explanation, let me know. But the Mishnah said it is a manifestation of God's power, but anyways. Okay. So let's get back. So why is rain? How do we call rain? Atagi vor lalam Hashem. Okay, the bracha begins. God, you're very powerful. B'chayim meitim. I do want to point out one more thing. I don't know if I mentioned it directly. It's obvious, this idea, but it's really quite beautiful. What do we say? B'chalchel chayim b'chesed. God causes life in great kindness. B'chayim meitim b'rachamim rabim. He resurrects the dead in mercy. And then immediately, immediately we go from, you know, helping the sick and helping the fallen and helping those who are captives. The kind of like what we've said many times, he said in the first bracha, God is awesome, powerful, and great. And then it's Osem Mishpat Yatom V'Aman V'Ger. God does the justice for the widow and the orphan, always the greatness of God and the humility of God, as we say, the greatness of God is manifest. Perhaps it's manifest in is creating the world, but that's not what we focus on. And it's manifest in resurrection, but, resurrection and helping the poor are sort of equal. And, it's like we've said many times, and, you know, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked to save Yerushalayim, he also asked for a doctor from Tzadok, and I think, you know, Rav Soloveitchik, I always like to mention, points out that, yes, he's saving the Jewish people, but you have to get a doctor for someone who's sick, you know, and you never lose sight. And that's the challenge of great leadership, great rabbis and great leaders who, you know, are great pastoral. One of the key roles of a rabbi, people don't see, is to be a pastor. Sometimes people just look at, you know, how big a Talmid Chacham is it and how good a speaker he is. Those are important things. I don't know how, being a Talmid Chacham for, depends what shul you're at. In many, many shuls, it's not really important. Being a high school principal, it's not really important if you're, and I don't mean to minimize it, but why is it important if you're, a Talmid Chacham, if you're teaching kids in grade, you know, 10 or even 12? Like, what do the kids know? And, you have to know more than them. You have to be a great teacher, a great pedagogue, and you have to have vision and warmth and empathy, all kinds of wonderful things. But being a Talmud Chacham is not so important on the list of priorities for a day school principal, nor should it be in many shuls as a rabbi. It's in certain shuls, maybe that's very important. Again, not to minimize it, but we sometimes, you know, we become so focused on learning. There's so many other things that are important, and you don't have to be the world's greatest Talmud Chacham to give a shear. Anyway, so, but that's what, but very often people get so involved in, you know, upper level things that they forget about the, you know, the person who's needy. Is mentioned many times. Rav Chaim said, in Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the role of the rabbi is to take care of the poor and the orphan and the widow and to have to, and you know, when to close the gemara. Rav Chaim was very famous that when, single girls got pregnant. It's not a modern invention. Matter of fact, I'm guessing it happened way more 150 years ago. They didn't have birth control. So I imagine many, many more single girls from homes, you know, got pregnant. Today, they doesn't happen so often because they know they use birth control. So these are so it was well known that Rav Chaim would the people would leave their babies with Rav Chaim. I'm not making it. I mean, I was
No,
I
it's Rabbi Kalman. Excuse me, but I'm just reading now My Father's Journey by Sarah Rieger. So her grandfather was Simcha Zelig Rieger. So she writes her grandfather wrote a memoir. Her father wrote a memoir, and he describes how his father told him that he would be sitting with Reb Chaim learning at the dining room table, and then someone would throw a baby in through the window.
There you go.
So
There you
that was, you know, I didn't know about the window. I knew about the
go. Now, I don't
baby,
know about that either. I didn't hear
yeah.
that. But
But it's
the
just like a
Simcha Rieger was
firsthand
he was
account of that.
the right hand man. Right. So that's well known. People, the greatness. You see, people say the problem is Rav Chaim was such a genius, was such a Talmud Chacham. We forget about how much of a Baal Chesed, how amazing his acts of Chesed, because we focus the genius of Rav Chaim. He changed the entire methodology, how we learn Gemara, the whole Brisker Derech, which swept the world, and people use his analytical greatness and all the stories of the genius of Rav Chaim. But we forget his chesed, his greatness was being a Baal Chesed, and that's what he said is the role of the rabbi, to be a Baal Chesed. The role of a Rosh Yeshiva is to be a Talmud Chacham, but the role of the Rav is to be a Baal Chesed, and of course the Rav is the Posek, not the Rosh Yeshiva. I mean, that's a whole other issue, but, never, until after World War II, never was a Rosh Yeshiva allowed to Paskin Shilas because they lived in an ivory tower. As they should, they're living in. We need ivory towers. We need university research centers. We need Lehavdil, whatever universities, Kollelim. We need that, but they're a little aloof from the people. It's the purpose. The Rav who's interacts with the person. Of course, then the Rav does have to know a little bit. As a consult, okay, it gets complicated in the modern world. Of course, everything in life is complicated, but that's true. But and I think they say, although I don't know if it's as true, that the Chafetz Chaim was such a tzaddik, we forget about his great learning. Usually when we think about the Chafetz Chaim, we don't think about what a Talmud Chacham he was. Although I don't know, I mean, how can you not think that? But still, everybody focuses, Lashon Hara and what a Tzaddik and the Chafetz Chaim, I mean, even his whole name is his Chesed. But so that sometimes detracts from his great learning, and that was true with Rav Chaim. So that was Mary or Mechach Chaim. That's what God does, and Rav Chaim was, and he didn't say. But, why did the mother get pregnant, at 17 when she's not married? Like, that wasn't what Rav Chaim did. That's, there's the other, felt one more story and then we'll go on. The famous story, a famous story, Rav Soloveitchik has a story in Ish HaLacha that, there were two deaths in I guess in Brisk in one day, and one the first one was some nobody. I hate to say that, some poor fellow died and whatever. And then half an hour later, the biggest Talmud Chacham in the city died. Whatever, great well, whoever it was, somebody very very prominent. So the Chevra Kedisha was going to do the funeral of the great Gvir, first. And Rav Chaim said over his dead body, basically, we don't do things like that. That was Rav Chaim. He had a just a total focus on chesed. I also think, right, they said, what about when they didn't do a bris on the kid? That used to be common. It's becoming common again, too. People don't want to do a bris, so they can they bury their prince. I mean, the Rav Chaim said, what does that have to do with anything? Of course, you do. He didn't get bothered by these issues. Very interesting. I am assuming Rav Soloveitchik picked up a lot of this. I mean, Rav Soloveitchik was 15 years old when his grandfather died. I don't think he met him more than four or five times in his life. So it's not like today. They flew home for Pesach. When Rav Soloveitchik went to Berlin, the University of Berlin, he describes how he didn't know if he'd ever see his parents again. This is 19, the Rav's born in 1903. So this is probably 1925. He goes to Berlin. He's, I believe, 22 years old. He didn't know if he'd ever see his parents again. And he didn't know about a Holocaust coming. He did see his father went to New York. He came to New York, but whatever. Yeah. Yocheved, you want to say
Yeah,
something?
so I was just thinking that we don't have so many stories like this about the Rav, but there's one story where he would support a well-known mamzer in the community that everybody shunned. I don't remember the source I have for this, but I'm just saying he certainly, we think of him as more of an intellectual, not as as someone doing
Right,
chesed,
so
but she did do
that's
a lot of
an
chesed, but for some reason that didn't make it to the
right. So it's
spot.
the same thing. We think of God as this powerful God who created the world because of Egypt, but the essence of God is he takes care of the poor. That's exactly where all this is all coming from. That's we discussed El Gadol Gibor. We went over that a few times already. You know, Dvarim, where El Gadol HaGibor Banarak comes from. And you see it right here. Mechalchal Chaim Bechesed Mechaim Meitim. But right away, Somech Noflim, Rofech Cholim, Umatir Asurim. That's the great, who cares, Tchias HaMeitim? Or it's like the halacha that, in a different context, but one of my favorite halachot, they tell you the Mashiach is coming. I said, who cares? We don't worry about the Mashiach. Just worry about this world. So let's say you're giving a shir. Let's say right now, let's say an announcement comes on. They give an Amber Alert. They have those in the state. They have those in Canada. Like if a kid goes missing, whatever, God forbid, they do an Amber Alert. So let's say they do an Amber Alert. The Mashiach just arrived and the plane's leaving. You want to get there. They have a, what's it called? They don't have those anymore. The planes that go faster than the speed of sound. You can still get to Yerushalayim before Shabbos. If you get to the airport in a half an hour, you can greet the Mashiach. And you don't go. You're not supposed to go. We do not, so it's for the Mashiach. The Mashiach can wait. You're learning. I think the Gemara is saying, Tinokot Shobek Rabban, more importantly, even the Torah of the children. So Mashiach can wait. Don't worry. You just learn Torah. We don't stop Torah even for Binyan Beit HaMikdash. It's in a beautiful halacha. Morris, what do you want to ask?
I was going to say, I was looking at Rabbi Felder's commentary. I think it's the Marsha he quotes, but he says the purpose Chayamitim and Mashiva Ruach Morda Geshem is to contrast like a strong man, like a strong person is known for their ability to fight, to conduct war, to kill people,
right.
To destroy land. And Hashem's Vura is contrasted to be the opposite. He's
excellent.
Reviving the dead. He's bringing water.
I have that here on my notes on the bottom of the page. Not in the name of Rabbi Felder. I have the names of other people. That's exactly. Many of the people point out, very good, Morris. Thank you. That what we point out, the strength of people, they can kill. It goes on in the world today. That they can kill, and the strength of God is to bring life. Yes, thank you. 100%. That's great. That's harder. You know, Ezu HaGibor HaKovesh Et Yitzro, right? So that's the other aspect of Gvura. Here, right? Gvura means someone who can conquer their desire. And what's, of course, God does this every day, right? When there's another aspect of the Gvura of God that, again, is not mentioned here, but the Gemara says, right, that we've did this in the past. God davens every day. What's the tefillah? It says, "Vaviotim al harkochi, v'simachtim v'beit tefillati." I always like to point out, you know, there are three ways to understand the pasuk in Chumash. I'm not getting the 70 drachen, but the three basic ways. There are really two, but let's do three. Number one is the literal meaning of the pasuk. But the literal meaning is often is just has no real meaning. It's like I always say, you know, answer the door. That doesn't mean to, you know, did I ever tell you this bad joke from on Get Smart? You know, on Get Smart, remember the show? So when Agent 86, you know, had Jaime the robot, so he would tell him to go answer the door, and Jaime would say, the door didn't ask any questions, right? Because we understand answer the door, literally, of course, what was the question? But we understand people don't talk literally. People talk metaphorically. So the Torah is the same way. So very often the literal meaning, in normal sense, literal, you know, that's what it means. But when the Torah says there's a literal meaning, there's the pshat, the contextual meaning, and non-contextual meaning. And that's drush, without getting into all the details. The contextual meaning is the pshat, what it means in the context. And the drush is an extra level, the non-contextual meaning. So here, about God's prayer, what we did is we turned the literal meaning into a drasha. So the pasuk says, we say it on Yom Kippur, Vaviotima, we say it in the Haftorah and every fast day, Vaviotima al-Harkochi, I will bring you to my holy mountain, V'simachtim, and I will rejoice with you, V'beit tefilati, in my house, V'beit tefilati, in my house of prayer. That's Yeshayahu talking, right? That the Beit HaMikdash is a place of prayer for everybody. Because my house is a house of prayer for all nations. Not just Jews, not like Mecca and Medina, where only Muslims can go, right? It's for all Jews, right? I think one of them non-Muslims can go, but one of them only Muslims can go. But anyway, so we welcome everybody. So what does it mean, Beit Tfilah? What does it mean the temple is a house of prayer? It means it's a place where people come to pray. Not only Jews, everybody comes to pray. So that's the meaning of the verse. The Gemara has its Rasha. Gemara says, no. Beit Tfilah ti, my house of prayer means God prays. So what the Gemara is doing, it's really very beautiful if you think about it. Gemara is taking the literal translation of the verse, because this, my house is, in my house of prayer, they're interpreting it literally, like God is praying. It's my house, it's where I pray. Now, that's, of course, doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara says that from here we learn that God prays every day, right? It's a beautiful idea. That it's a very difficult, but very, what does it mean? A very beautiful idea, but it's a model for man that we have to, if God prays, we pray, and God needs us. And, you know, the whole idea, it's really a beautiful idea. And what's, then the Gemara is so beautiful. The Gemara doesn't get flustered. Like if you take today, God prays. So you pray, what do you mean God prays? That's ridiculous. We pray for our needs. What needs does God have? That's not what the Gemara does not bother by that. God prays, good. What does the Gemara want to know? What does God pray? What's God's prayer? And what's God's prayer? That he should be a gibor. He should be kovesh et yitzro. That, that his mercy attribute of anger should conquer his attribute of mercy. Because the Jewish people anger God. We don't do what we're supposed to do all the time. Like, that's what it means to be a human being. We don't do what we're supposed to do. And so, we should punish you, get angry. God says, let me subdue my anger. Like God is struggling. You know, we know that's the simple truth. God wants to destroy. And Moshe says, no, God has this, you know, willingly have to punish. How can he not punish a just God? And Moshe convinces God. So God is sort of, that's how the image, it's really almost a heretical image, but that's the image our sages present of God. He's struggling with himself, whether to be nice to the Jewish people or give them what they deserve. And he says he should act, lifnim mishurat hadin, that he should do more than the call of duty. He should act things even if we're not deserving. But that's another aspect of atagibor. Even though it doesn't say it, but I think that's included. Atagibor, the greatness of God, is to show compassion, and that's sort of alluded to. So mefnaflim, rofecholim, and it's not always easy. We have to show compassion to people we don't want to show compassion, right? It's much easier to love humanity than to love your neighbor. I don't know if reyacha really means your neighbor. Like we love your neighbors. I don't know that that's the exact meaning of reyacha, but let's say it means your neighbor. It's easier to like the person who lives 8 blocks away than to like your neighbor, because your neighbor, they makes noise, and you know, they cut down the tree, and they mow the lawn on Saturday afternoon, and you know, good fences make good neighbors. There's a reason we have such a statement. It's very nice when people get along with their neighbors, but we know many people are not such good friends with their neighbors. So it's much easier to love in the abstract. You gotta love the people who drive you crazy. That's who you have to love. And that's exactly the gvura of God. He does chesed even though he's struggling. He wants to do anger. Again, it's whatever, metaphorically, but it's, of course, the lesson is for us. I don't know what God does. Listen, don't worry about what God does. Don't worry about the Mashiach Olam HaBa. Don't worry about any of that stuff. You bring people back to life. You be a doctor, you heal people, you give people charity to bring them back. Like we discussed last week, it can be a metaphor. Chaim Eitim doesn't have, I mean, it's also literal, but it can also be metaphorically bringing people back to life. Okay, let's talk a little bit about rain. Why is rain called Gvurat Shamim? So how many people, I figure I'll spend a couple minutes. I see somebody just asked me very quickly, just where did Rav Chaim do with the babies, right? How did Rav Chaim find homes? I really have no idea. That's a very good question. What did Rav Chaim do with the babies? I assume he found them homes. That's what I'm assuming. People, adoptions. I have no idea. It's an interesting question, but I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, okay, so let's learn the first Mishnah in Masechet Ta'anit, which talks about when we say Mashif HaRuach HaMurid HaGashem. Now, it's interesting, and we'll see this, but let me just, I guess, do some background here. We only say Mashif HaRuach HaMurid HaGashem half the year. We say beginning on Shmini Atzeret, and we end it on Sukkot. So we say for this year, we say it's slightly more than half the year. It's a leap year, but we say it half the year. Now, why don't we say it all year?
Because sometimes it's not good to have it.
Okay, but who cares? Well, in other words, the question is, what are we doing when we say Meshu? That's v'tein talu matar. This is not a prayer for rain.
Oh, I see.
Right. So we're going to see in 1 minute, this is an issue that comes up in the first Mishnah in Masechet Tanit. But as I understand, the first three brachot are sheva. We're not allowed to ask for anything. Right, but we didn't talk about it now, but there's a big problem. Many people, and it's post-Talmudic, many people were opposed to saying Zachreinu L'chaim. Mechama, how do you say Zachreinu L'chaim in the first three brachot? That's a prayer. Zachreinu L'chaim, Melachafes B'chaim, we say for a seretz yimei tshuva. You're asking God. That is a prayer, and we're not allowed to say prayers in the first three brachot. So it's not in the Talmud. And that's why, I don't think it's in the Talmud, but for sure, if you forget Zachreinu L'chaim, you do not repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. If you don't say HaMelech HaKadosh, because the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah is Malchut, God's kingship over the world, you must repeat the Shmoneh Esrei, that one word. But you don't say Zachreinu L'chaim, it's a big deal. We don't say it. The question, how are we allowed to say it? So our sages struggled. Commentary struggled. It's not really right. I think it's one of these things that we don't care if it's right. Like when your life is, it's like a pikuach nefesh thing. Like our life is hanging in the balance. And don't give me these halachas. I'm not supposed to say it. Pikuach nefesh wipes out all the halachot, and therefore I think that's really the real reason. The reason that the poskim aren't going to express it like that. What they explain is it's different. You're asking for the public. It's not you. It's plural. But it is difficult. But this is not, these are the brachot of shevach, of praise. The Tein Tov, the middle 13 brachot, which hopefully we'll get to next week or the week after we'll start, Atachonein, the middle 13 brachot, that's where asking God for things so that we don't do on Shabbat. And of course, the ninth bracha is Baruch Aleinu. God should give us economic success. And of course, especially in an agricultural society, but even today, the number one determinant of success is rain. So we have to pray for rain, but it's not always good to rain. Well, it's not always good when it rains. We'll discuss it. What if you say B'tein Talu Matar in New York or in Toronto in May, on May 24th today, you say B'tein Talu Matar, they have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. So we'll discuss that question. It's not as simple as you think. In the Shulchan Aruch, it says you have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. But Rav Chaim, I think, had a different, the brilliance of Rav Chaim had a whole different understanding of this. We'll can get to in a number of weeks. But Mashiva Ruach Amor Hagashem is not a prayer for rain. It's the greatness of God that he brings rain. That's true in May. I don't care if it's, we don't want it to rain now. I don't care. It's all year. So that's really the issue a little bit in the first Mishnah in Masechet Tanit, which we'll do right now. So just let me share my screen. So Masechet Tanit talks about the fast days, but very little about the fast days that we know. It's all about the fast days because it didn't rain and there's no food. That was most of the fast days. That's the first two chapters. So the Mishnah begins, Meimatai Maskevim Vurak Shamim. When do we mention Gvurat? This is what we call Gvurak Shamim, but we say it in the Bracha of Gvurat, the power of rain. So Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Miyantav Rishon Shachag. You say it on the first day of Sukkot, because Sukkot is the beginning of the rainy season. But funny, why it should be by the sun, but let's see that for now. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Miyantav Acharon Shachag. You say it on Shmini Atzeret, of course, that's our practice. So Amar lo Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua says, Nu, ho'aveng shamim ele siman klala b'chag. If it rains on Sukkot, that's a curse. Right, the Mishnah says that it's a master tells a servant, bring me a glass of water. He brings him the glass of water and he throws it in his face. God says, go out of your house to sit in the sukkah, and God makes it rain. He throws the water in our face and we have to leave the sukkah and go back in the house. So when it rains on Sukkot, that's a sign from God, things are not good. Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Ni lo amarti lishol. I didn't say we should pray for rain. I just said we should mention rain. Because the first three brachot is not a prayer for rain. It's acknowledging that God is the master. He brings rain. He should bring it at the proper time. But even when it's not the proper time, I still thank God. You thank God for what you thank your parents, even if they're not doing something right now, for what they do in general. So God brings things. So, Amar lo, so you should, okay. Im kein lo lam yei maskir. So say it all year. If you're right, say it all year. So in the Mishnah doesn't respond to this. Rabbi Eliezer doesn't respond to this. So you could say, Eina chinami. Okay, yeah. Taka, we should say it all year. That's not what we do, though. Or you could say, Rabbi Eliezer, it's true. It's not asking, but we still should say it around the time. Even Rabbi Yoshua admits, ideally, we should ask We should say that from the beginning of Sukkot. The reason we don't do it is this technique, because it also happens to be that we have to sit in the sukkah outside when it rains. But if not for that, we would want it to rain. So that's what Rabbi Elazar is saying. We really want it to rain, but we don't practically, but theoretically. So therefore, I'll split it. We'll say Mashiva Ruach, because it's the time of rain, but we won't say Vitain Tal Lamatar. Now, we don't actually say, okay, that's, and then the Mishnah says, Ein Sholim, the next Mishnah, that's Vitain Tal Umachar, Ela Samuch Likshamim. You have to do it next to the time of rain. That's a simple pshat. It's actually not so simple how to interpret that Mishnah. Okay, and then we just want to say, so the Mishnah continues, Maskin Gvurak Shamim B'tchiyat HaMeitim. So we say Gvurak Shamim, which is Mashi Vurak Mordek Hashem, in the Bracha B'tchiyat HaMeitim. Shoalim, the Tein Talamatar, we say in Birchat Hashanim, Barech Aleinu At Hashanah Zot. Havdalah, we say in Chonein Hadat, Atachonein Adamdat, and then Atachon Atanu, because you need knowledge. Without knowledge, you can't make distinctions. Okay, and therefore, that's why the Mishnah says it's the first, by the way, this is the exact same question the Mishnah asked in Brachot. The first Mishnah is, Me'emetai Korin to Shema. What, when, from when do we say Shema? So the Gemara says, what do you mean from when do you say Shema? Who says you have to say Shema? What do you mean from when? You're making an assumption. I don't know that you have to say Shema. And we did discuss, remember, that according to many, saying Shema is not a biblical command. It's only a rabbinic command. V'shomcha u'kumecha is talking about learning Torah. So the Gemara says, how do you know you say Shema? But even so, it's still a rabbinic command based on that verse. So it's the same thing here. What do you mean, when do you say Gvurak Shamim? What do you mean, when? How do I know we say it at all? So they said, we're coming from the Mishnah. This is in Masechet Brachot that says when we mention it. So now they didn't talk about it over there. Yeah, that, why? But so they answered it here. So therefore we learn, May Emetai Maskim Gvurak Shamim. When do we mention Gvurak Shamim? So, right, so where it says learn it over there, okay, we don't have to go over the whole details of the sukkah, but words, why did they split it? Why did it happen, Brach, what happened here? Fine. Okay, that's not for us. So the Gemara says, why Gvurak Shamim? When Gvurak Shamim? The power of Shamim. So Amar Rav Yochanan Mivnei Yordim B'Gvura. They come down powerfully. So what does that mean? It could mean it rains like, you know, you get soaked, it's raining strong. Like Choni Hamagal, when Choni Hamagal drew the circle, right? The Gemara later on in Masechet Tanit, it has the famous story of Choni Hamagal, who it wasn't raining, and they went to, you know, different people asked for rain, and they went to Choni Hamagal. So that's why we call him Choni Hamagal. He drew a circle. He says, God, I'm not leaving until you bring rain. And it started to rain like drops. It says, no, God, that's not what I meant. I meant real rain. And it started pouring like cats and dogs. No, I don't mean that's too strong. No, that rain, it's Goldilocks. You know, that one's too hard. That one's too soft. This just right. I want the rain to come down just right. And then he did that and the rain came down. And that's why I got the name Choni Hamagal. And Shimon ben Shetach, which means it's a very early story. Shimon ben Shetach is two generations before Hillel and Shammai. It's really the early. There's really very little Torah Shabbat Peh. Shimon ben Shetach sends him a message. It says, Ilmalei Choni ata. If you weren't Choni, I would excommunicate you. A chutzpah, the way you talk to God. You tell God, I don't like this, but what can I do? You talk to God like that, and he listens to you. Must be you've got something there. So so you could say the way the rain comes down, Gvurak Shamim, but it also means, I think it really means more that the power of God is expressed through rain. In other words, you see the Yordim B'Gvura means the fact that they come down, it rains, demonstrates the greatness of God. And then just, to finish up, the Gemara says, okay, enough for us. How do you know you do this in tefillah? Right. So we already say, we say it in Gvurak Shamim, the second bracha tefillah meitim. How do you know? You have to do it in when you pray. I have to mention God's great. Maybe say it in Psukei Dezimra. We say many of the other praises in Psukei Dezimra. Why do you say the praise of God in rain? I mean, in Shmon Esrei. The Tanya, so this is a very important mark because it's about prayer in general. It says in the Shema, Lavat Hashem Elokeichem Lavdo B'chol Levavchem U'chol Nafshechem. You have to love God and worship Him with all your heart. Eizu Avodah Shebelev, which is Avodah Shebelev. What's worship? Zutvila, Zutvila. You have to pray. And it says right afterwards, "Venatati mitaratzachem b'toyi ramakosh," that the greatness of God, again, material blessings, very practical. I will make it rain be'ito in its proper time, and that's probably why they only want to say it like the emphasis. If it rains in the wrong time, it's bad. Venatati mitaratzachem b'ito. So therefore, that's why we have to say Mashivaruach Amorit Hageshem right here in this at this point in the Shema. Now it's interesting, this idea, Ezu Avadasha Balev is Tfilah, this is what the Rambam quotes, and according to the Rambam, this is the source that Tfilah is a biblical mitzvah. But as we've spoken about many times, the Ramban disagrees, the Ramban and basically everybody else disagrees with the Rambam. And holds that prayer, there is no daily biblical obligation to pray. As I always like to point out, it's so beautiful. The Ramban says prayer is an act of kindness. God allows us to pray. We're allowed to approach God, to ask him for things. What a beautiful idea. So they, the simple reading is the Rambam's right. Ezu avodah shebelev, v'lavdo b'chol avavkam. The Gemara says it. So they all interpret, that's what we call an asmachta. We have a lot of this. Is a humongous topic that the Gemara, it leans, lismach. In other words, the idea of tefillah is rabbinic, but we attach it to a pasuk. It gives it more authority, maybe a mnemonic device, all of those things. There's huge discussion that it's often not easy to know, and this is a perfect example. It's not easy to know when the Gemara says the pasuk means X, does that mean what it really means? No, it doesn't really mean that. Just that's an extra idea we can relate it to. So that's what we call an asmachta. An asmachta. An asmachta is a rabbinic law. So most of the commentary assumed, although the chol avichem, to worship God with your heart doesn't mean prayer. So what does it mean? It means your heart. To help people, you have a warm, I don't know. The heart sometimes in the ancient world meant the mind, also included the mind. I don't know of a Greek philosophy, but the heart, you have a good heart. When Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai asks his five students, what's the most important trait? And I think it's Rav Elazar ben Arach who says, a lev tov, and he says, that's the one. That includes everything. So not talking about prayer. Doesn't necessarily mean prayer. The Gemara says it means prayer, at least on a rabbinic level, and the Rambam interprets that on a biblical level. That's the biblical meaning of the words. That's the pshat of the pasuk, because the worship God with our heart, and therefore the words we say are secondary. It's the feeling we have. The words are just an expression, and that's why davening with kavanah is so much more important. That's why it's better to daven less focused and more sort of, you know, just to say the words. It's a big problem we have today. The sitter has been a real problem. I mean, we need it, but the sitter in many ways is a big negative. We discussed the way at the beginning because people focus way too much. We have to say this, we have to say that. You know, it's not true. You have to worship God with our, you can skip lots of things, but how can we skip it? It's in the sitter, right? And then you'll be like a reformed Jew if you skip it. But no. What can you do? But it's really, that's the first halakha in the Shulchan, the first Siman Shulchan Aruch, better to daven less. You can skip things. It's okay. I remember Rav Schechter told us, not only can you skip Sukkot Zimra, that's for sure you can skip. I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying you should, whatever power, whatever you daven with kavanah. And if the shul is too quick, either come early or you say it later or you skip. You say, you don't have to say everything in Sukkot Zimra. Rav Schechter told us, the idea is you want to say Shmon Esrei. The idea of Tevilah B'Tzibur is to start Amidah. And sometimes from Barakut to Shmon Esrei, they're so fast. You can't keep up. You're in the middle of Shema. They're in Shmon Esrei already. So he said there are even parts of Birchat Kriyat Shema you can skip. I never asked him which parts. He didn't specify. He says you have to know what are the key lines. But even in Birchat Kriyat Shema, if you're going to miss Tfilah B'Tzibur at the start, you can even skip there. Whatever. Anyways. But that's, Avodah Shevalev, whatever. So it's not saying the words of the Siddur. Even the Rambam, when it says Avodah Shebelever, I mean, everybody agrees on a rabbinic level, it means we have to daven with our heart. You say the words, but the words are the reflections. It says, Rav Soloveitchik said, the words are the Ma'aseh HaMitzvah. They're the action. That's the technical fulfillment. But the Kiyum HaMitzvah, the fulfillment of the mitzvah is in the heart. The technical way to do that is by saying words. But that's the, just like when a person, Rachmana Litzvan, is sitting Shiva, the Shiva is the mourning, the ripping of the clothes. That's just a manifestation to reflect the inner mourning, or to take a happier thing, eating meat or drinking wine. That's not the real mitzvah. The real mitzvah is to be happy. But it's, how do you, when, How do you command happiness? How do you express your happiness? So you express your happiness. The manifestation is to drink wine because that makes most people happy, but that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is, sorry, that's why if you're a vegetarian, you don't have to eat meat on Yom Tov. Like, it's okay. That's not going to make you happy. Anyways, okay. So that's the source of tefillah. That's why Mashiv HaRuach has to be said here. Then there's one last piece, and this is sort of the key piece in a sense. So we have to say it here about Dasha B'Lev. And then the Gemara says like this. This is again the comparison, what we said earlier at the beginning, rain and Tchiyas HaMetim from God's perspective are the same. From our perspective, they're totally different. When you talk about it rains on, you live in Vancouver, it rains, I don't know, 250 days a year. It rains all the time. What do you mean rain? Rain and Tchiyas HaMetim, out of your mind. Rain is the most normal thing in the world, and Tchiyas HaMetim is the most abnormal thing in the world. And yet we combine them into one bracha, the greatness of God. Is equal bringing rain and Tchiyas HaMetim is all the same. And this is what the Gemara here just continues. Amar of Yochanan. Shlosha is a powerful Gemara. There are three keys that God has. Shalonim Saru b'yad shaliach. Very interesting. God often works with messengers. He has partners. So God asks his partners to carry out things. You have the power, right? Bracha comes through Avraham. God says to Avraham, you will bless other people. But there are three things that totally in the hand of God's, we have no control. It's wow. Mafteach shel gshamim, the key of rain. And it's interesting, the Gemara uses the word key. It's locked. And God's got to open up the vault. Got a key in the clouds. Mafteach shel chaya, the womb for a person to get pregnant. Again, unfortunately, those who struggle with this know how true that is. For other people, it's, so easy. But birth is controlled only by God. Who should have children and who should not? Just like mi yechiyahu mi yamut. It's not just who will die and who will live. Who will be born and who won't be born? Maybe, well, it's also in the Tanakh everything. Shel hametim and the key to resurrection. So it's interesting. Chaya and tchiyas hametim. I get it. They go together. I understand. But we throw in Shami, that's like very, like so mundane, but that's exactly what the Gemara, that's exactly what Mashiva Ruach is telling us. It's all one and the same. And this, of course, imagery, it is the same in nature, but the fact that God can do this, that's, or God is the only one who can bring rain and the only one who can determine life. Now, of course, you're going to tell me, well, that's not exactly true. We have fertility treatments and we have all that. Okay. That question doesn't bother me. That's about everything in life. And I don't even know what I don't have to interpret the Quran totally literally. Doesn't mean we, it means, God still determines when it works, when it doesn't work. The fact that God says that Chava is cursed, that she should have painful childbirth. No, we can do methods not to make it painful. Whenever God says something negative, we're allowed to fight with God. I mean it. We're allowed to say, God, that we don't want to do this. We're going to beat your negative. We're going to, right? It says in Israel that you have to look to the sky to rain. Unlike Egypt. Egypt produces, has the Nile, and we don't. And we say no. We say we are going to desalinate. And Israel is the, by far, I've mentioned before, the world power in rain production.
Oh no.
You're missing it, sweetie.
I fell asleep.
Israel, I was at a desalination plant. Israel recycles, I don't know, 85% of its water. When I was there 10 years ago, I don't remember exactly when, they told us that Israel is like, we know Israel is the world's superpower in water conservation because necessity is the mother of invention. When half the country is desert and there's not enough rain, you need to come up with a solution. So Israel did it, the brilliance of the scientists of Israel. And they reused 85, 90% of the water. The next country in the world was like Spain at 25%. So I said, Lahavdil, that's like Wayne Gretzky. That's when I was, it's a playoff still, So Wayne Gretzky, he scored 92 goals and that guy had 45 goals. It's like in a different league. Like you can't even talk about it in the same, can talk about, they're in different leagues. So, Israel is like, oh my gosh, how can we do that? We took away that rain is the sign if God is happy with us. We can do that. There's no theological problem with that. Whenever God says something, and God never even said it as a negative, like I won't give you, well, I guess sort of, I won't give you rain. We can try to outsmart God. Whether we're successful, maybe that's the sign. Maybe God's sign that he likes us is he made it successful. Not every scientific research project works. Yes, Ochevit, what do you want to say?
Okay, so maybe I missed it, but what was the answer? Like, why do we say Masha Baruch only half the year if it's just
because, right. So Rabbi Yeshua, because we don't want it to rain. I said, but who cares? Right. So the Gemara never directly answered the question.
Right.
That's correct. Maybe I didn't explain it well enough. Thank you. Right. So he says to Rabbi Elazar, you're right. Say it all year. And the Gemara ends there. So it could be, you can say, right. So maybe Rabbi Elazar says, oh, maybe I should, I don't, maybe I will say it all year. But it seems to be he understood, no, we're not going to say it all year. So therefore, so why say it a week early? Because that's when it really should rain. But you're right. In other words, there is an argument that's to be said all year. Nonetheless, the Gemara says we only mention it. Right. The Gemara is not clear. The Mishnah is not clear. Why? Right? Why not mention? That's exactly Rabbi Yeshua's question. Rabbi Lesser, if it's only about talking about the praise of God, you should say it all year. And the Gemara never answers that question. So apparently it's more than just a praise. I guess. I don't know. I don't know 100%. Right. It's not really asking for it. Maybe it is a little bit. We praise you, but you know, that's a way, you praise somebody very wealthy. That's a way, you know, to encourage them to give charity. You know, you introduce somebody. Here's a guy made $1 billion, you know, at the charity dinner, you know, like, so I don't know. I don't know, but you're right. It's not 1,000% clear.
Take a comment?
Yes.
It might be because in the Shema it says Be'ito, right?
And
so you don't remind somebody about what they can do when you don't really want them to be doing it anyway.
Right,
so you remind them sort of when you really want it.
Be'ito. But then you meant Be'ito, and that's why mention it. Although there is an argument you can say it all year, and Rabbi Elazar is saying, and that's the debate then. Okay, Rabbi Elazar is going to agree, we're only going to say it around the time we want it. But I can still say it the week of Sukkot, even though I don't really want it to rain for a week, because we're getting into the rainy season. And even though technically I don't want to, it's the warm up, you know, got to prepare God, to, so to speak, you know, to bring the rain. Okay. All right. Yes, Marty.
Rabbi, could you say something about Moy Tatal?
Moy Tatal. You know what? I daven Nusach Ashkenaz, so I didn't. That's the downfall. Sometimes I throw in Nusach Sfarad. Yeah, they say Moy Tatal. I know. Do rain comes all
year.
In Israel, correct. In Israel, Nusach Ashkenaz says Moy Tatal. The truth matter, I didn't look into it. I don't know why. I assume because I don't know. That's actually I don't know. I don't say Mori Tatal. What can I tell you? Why do they say Mori Tatal Nosach Ashkenaz in Israel? That's a very simple question that I should have a answer to. May I'll have to look up for next week. Okay, thank you.
I think Rosh Hashanah, by the way, even though that was Nosach Ashkenaz, says Mori Tatal even here.
Okay, could be. That's in like all great people have their own minhagim. The rabbi is all minhagim and all kinds of things. Right. Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that. He says more to tell all year. Yeah. No, okay. It's interesting. Yeah, I don't know why. But Nosach Ashkenaz doesn't say it. But there is, tal is different than geshem. Geshem is sometimes negative. Tal is never viewed as negative. That's my basic understanding. So why don't we say it? The question really is more, why don't we say it in Chutz Laaretz? I don't know. But I will point out something interesting. Thank you for reminding me, or for is we say Mashiv Aruch Amorit HaGeshem based on the Israeli schedule of rain. Right, there's a big, we know that, as a matter of fact, let me point this out to you, because it's one of my, I said one of my favorite halachot is that they're building the Beit HaMikdash. You wait, you're learning Torah, they'll build it without you. You'll meet the Mashiach a week later, that's okay. So here the Mishnah says, when the Yaseva Tain Talamatar, we Mashiv Ruach, see, there is a little bit of a break, because we don't want it to rain on the last day of Sukkot either. In other words, there's this tension. Mashiv Ruach is praise, so it's not 100% correlated to when we want it to rain, but it's a lot correlated. You see this, because for sure everybody agrees to say it either the first day of Sukkot or the last day, Shemini Atzeret. But asking, Matein Tel Matar, we don't start till the third of Cheshvan, which is, I don't know, 10 days later, but the Sukkot ends on the 22nd of Tishrei, whatever. V'sho'alim et ha'gshamim, they ask, Rabban Gamliel Omer b'shiva bo. No, the 7th. So this is such a beautiful halakha. Chamisha asar yom achar ha'chag. 15 days after. You have to wait 15 days. You really want it to rain sooner, but you got to wait 15 days to ask. Because it took 15 days, can you imagine? It took 15 days for some travelers to travel to Israel for Aliyah L'Rekel. A Jew supposed to go to visit to Yerushalayim, and they didn't have planes. And the Nahar Prat, the Euphrates, I think, right? It's a 15-day journey. So it's not nice. Somebody came to the temple to celebrate Sukkot, and he's taking, and you're going to daven for rain while he's traveling home? Such a beautiful halacha. The nation of Israel needs rain. The Jewish people need rain. But there's some guy who has his horse and buggy taking 2 weeks to get home. We're not allowed to pray for rain. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So you see, again, it's not a direct correlation. Now, we don't do that. We pray for rain when we don't have time. Maybe I can become on this next week, but we do it December 5th. Why that is an interesting question, but it relates to because that's the rainy season in Babel. That's rainy season in Babel. So when it comes to Vetein Tal Umatar,
that's based on the Mishnah and Tanis and the, right. And the Gemara writes it.
Oh, I understand, but why don't we do the same thing for Meshi Baruch or Morid? I think the answer is this praise idea. In other words, Mashi Baruch Morid Geshem, so why don't we just only say it in beginning on December 5th or whatever? In other words, we follow the Israel practice for Mashi Baruch, no matter where you live. But Vatain to Alamatar, we follow the local or the Babylonian practice. So again, because the praise, I guess this talking about praise, the ideal that we relate to the land of Israel. On the
it's only Maskirin, it's not Sho'alim. It's only
right,
praise.
But already the Mishnah says we should only ask for rain. We should only mention it at the time of rain. That was Rabbi Yeshua's argument. He said, otherwise then do it all year. That was exactly what Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Lazar. And he won the argument. If you're going to tell me I'm not asking for rain, so say it all year. So he said, no, okay, fine. I don't only say it at the time when it's going to rain. But we don't want it to rain for 60 days in after Sukkot. So we too, because the first Mishnah does put it not 100%, but 98% equivalent between asking for rain and praising God for the rain. So it's just interesting in the praise, we keep it on the Israel when we do what they do in the land of Israel. I think that's important. I think there's a message there. But when it comes to the practical aspect in the ninth bracha, we're asking God for rain, that we're going to do only in that we're going to do when it's actually needed. Okay, but we can pick up next week. Why don't we do it here? Like, you know, maybe we need rain all year. That's what I said right at the beginning. What happens if you say Metein Talamatar the whole year? Because in Toronto, it rains all year. August is the rainiest month, apparently, of the year. That's okay, Morris, I'll take your question in 1 second. Just let me do a quick review. Oh, Steve, I'm sorry. Steve, I'll take your question in 1 second. And okay, so we just began. Let's do very quickly go over it. We spoke a little about Chiyan HaMeitim and there's Yimot HaMashiach, Olam Haba, Gan Eden, and all these things, but they're not the same, and some are physical, some are spiritual. But for on a practical level, we don't really care. We are always focused on this world. That's Olam Hazeh. All the rewards in the Torah are material, are very this worldly. We're concerned about this world. Don't worry about the other worlds. We don't, and the Tchias HaMeitim, we don't mention here the Gur, we don't mention creation or the Exodus. We mention them other places, but not specifically in Tfilah. We just saw the Gemar made a big deal. Mashi v'ruach must be in Tfilah. Because we have to worship God with our heart, but we don't have to say the Exodus and creation at Tfilah. We can say it any time, but we have to say rain. During the Tfilah, but I said the greatness of God is He creates and He resurrects and He helps the poor and He helps the heal the sick and those who are taken captive. And of course, that's our role. And we talk over of Chaim and the greatness of God. That's always how it's manifest. And that's, of course, is a message for us. Gvura also means to conquer your inclinations, and God's inclination sometimes is to punish the people for good reasons, perhaps, and yet he prays that he shouldn't. Kiviyako, God is struggling, And we have the God should act nimishur hadin, and his mercy should conquer his anger. And of course, that's a very message for us. And then we basically saw the idea of where Mashiach Ruach comes from, how it's connected to Tchiyat HaMetim. It's one of the three keys. Or two of the three keys are Tchiyat HaMetim and rain. For God, it's all the same, even though for us it's very different. Rain and Tchiyat HaMetim are one. And the Mishnah has all discussion, Mashiach Ruach, when they say beginning of Sukkot, the end of Sukkot. But this is the notion of praise. It's not the action of asking God's for our needs. Okay. Yeah, Steve, what's your question? Then I'll take a look in the chat box quickly. You want to ask, Steve? You had your hand up, or
My question is, you were saying something about saying Mashiach Baruch in its time, but we say it early in we say it at the end of Sukkot.
No, we say it to be right. No, so yeah, that is really the time it should rain. And say, I guess there are three times we want for rain. Rabbi Lezer said, really, we want rain the beginning of Sukkot already. But since we have to sit in the Sukkah, and it's a curse if it rains in Sukkot, so we adopt the view of Rabbi Yeshua, even though we would want rain, we're not going to mention it now. And Rabbi Lezer says, we can mention now because I'm not really praying for rain. It's the time rain. So that's one debate, and we follow Rabbi Yeshua. Then the second debate is, okay, but everybody agrees by Shemini Atzeret, we want rain. That week, so we say Mashiach Baruch, Merit Geshem. Ah, but there's another problem. There are travelers going back who visited. So we're going to, even though we do want rain, we'll mention Mashiach Baruch. Again, we're not asking for rain, but we're sort of alluding, you know, God, you know, rain. We're not asking anything, but, you know, we'll just hint to it. I mean, that's not really what it is, but it's the idea of praising. But because of this Jew who came, it's such a beautiful halacha. The same way it's to save Rav Tzadok's life. It's everything we're saying, that you're saving the world. Don't worry about saving the world so much. Save your next door neighbor. Save the person who needs help. It's this beautiful idea. There's this poor Jew who traveled. He doesn't have can't go by car or whatever. He has a slow horse. He doesn't have 26 horses taking back. Takes him 15 days to get back. We're going to wait. And the entire class is going to wait for him. So so we wait 15 days to actually ask for the rain. So that's what we do. So from beginning of Sukkot to the end, till 15 days later, that's sort of the time period where we're playing around with. It is the rainy season, but how much we're going to focus on rain is a debate. Do we just ask for the rain? Do we just mention the rain? Do we ask for it, et cetera? That's the debate. Yochebet, yes.
Yeah, just a technical question. So the same Tal Umatar, we say it's starting December 4th, I believe, or 5th?
December 5th now. It's going to change.
Right, okay. So that is also, that goes according to the Eretz Yisrael timeline?
No, that doesn't. That. We'll talk about that next week.
Oh, please. We didn't, okay. Okay.
Yeah, no, it goes according to Bavel. Bavel. The question is, why do we go according to Bavel? I understand when you lived in Bavel, we go according to Bavel. Why do we do that? Yeah, but it's not Eretz Yisrael. They say it the 7th of Cheshvan, and we only say it on December 5th. And of course, why December 5th? Okay, that we'll have to discuss next week. Okay, just let me go through the chat box. This hopefully to the focus. Folks of nature are fully from God. Yes, that's the whole idea. We recognize God through nature. That's 100% all the time. Through rain, that's how we know. That's what we say. We daven. That's exactly what he said. Israel doing salination of the water. Salinating the water is sort of against. It's not really against because rain was the methodology for how we knew if God was happy with what we did. If it rains on Sukkot, that's God's message.
That was in response to the earthquake, the blessing on the earthquake.
I don't have a good answer.
That's what that. That comment was on
that was common. The
earthquake.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
I didn't make it clear. Sorry.
Yeah, the force of nature are truly from God, even when the forces of nature are negative.
Yeah.
Okay. But the bracha is more positive. It's not a negative bracha. That's why I struggle with it. Like, why do we say like, wow, God, you're so powerful. Yeah, you're so powerful. You're destroying. Yeah. That's not. So I'm a little. I don't fully understand it. But of course, your point is correct. Yes. Okay. The Rav, it's from Mamzer, right? How did Rav Chaim find homes? Okay. The Rav eloquently tells over the story of Rav Chaim of Valashin, where his Mashiach has arrived while any at home. He was supposed to be minding a pot on the stove and asked his wife when he comes to market to give him his dress code. Forgot to mend it. No, that's a whatchamacallit story. That's a Shai Agnon story. I did it in high school. I don't know if it was a Rav Chaim of of a lashon, I don't think. I'm pretty sure, and correct me if I'm wrong, one of Agnon's stories was about how somebody wasn't, he didn't clean his suit and the Mashiach came on Friday. He was missing a batin, so he couldn't go greet the Mashiach. Right, right. There's a beautiful story. Now I have to look that up. But did the Rav tell it over at Votra?
Yes, he told it over in a Yardside Drasha. It's worth, if anyone here knows Yiddish, it's worth listening to the Yardside Drasha on Brachos. Just to hear him say this story.
Yeah,
so whatever, he said it in the name of Rav Chaim, but okay. That last line, okay. When he's, you know,
I can almost guarantee you.
Okay, could be.
No, I can almost guarantee you that the Rav read Agnon also.
Yeah, no, for sure he read Agnon.
For sure the read Rav Agnon. I could be wrong, yeah. But I seem to remember doing this story in high school. You know, who takes Agnon today? What Jewish high school learns Agnon today? Oh my gosh. But okay. But Shai Agnon, who of course was a religious Jew, of course, and he was the only Israeli, I think, to win the Nobel Prize in Literature. Okay. Anyways, yeah, it is a beautiful story, whether whoever originated the story.
Well, my grandfather, who was a Vishnitzer Chassid, used to have Shai Agnon's Yamim Noraim in Hebrew in his talis bag, and he would go through it, you know, Rosh Hashanah, and so I bought the English version, and that's
I have the English version. Little cute, beautiful book, Shai Agnon, sitting right here,
book.
About stories about gender. Right. I have also, what's his name? Jeffrey Sachs does a lot on Agnon. Now, the editor in they published all his short stories. He was a great writer, of course. Yeah, in every place you find God's greatness, you find this humility. Correct. That's what I was referring to. We've discussed that. Thank you very much. Yes. And this is it. The greatness of God, creation, resurrection. But he helps the poor. And that's, of course, the one they use is always, Hela Gadol HaGibor. God is awesome, powerful. The first brach of the Shmon Esrei. And Osem Mishpat Yatom Ba'amana. He helps the widow. Okay. During the summer, some say more to tell. Yeah, that's what we were talking about. Correct. Mostly mined through Tanakh. Okay, yeah, that's what I said. Lev, right. We say Lev is heart, but correct. In ancient world, the heart was more connected to the intellect. I'm just not so up on that, but thank you, Justin, for that. Emotions are klayot. Interesting, right. Bochen klayot, okay. Rainiest month is September. I thought it's August, but okay, Zeb, if you... it's not April. When I was a kid, we had the April showers, spring, May flowers. April is not the rainiest month. I always thought it was August. You wouldn't tell me it's September. No. But it's for sure before the time they say B'tein Tal Umatar. That goes without saying. December 4th, outside of God's calendaric hours. Yeah. We'll get to that next week. What is the name of the story of Agnon? I don't know what the name of the story of Agnon. I'm sorry. Listen, that I remember I did a story of Agnon in high school. I remember what it was about. That's enough. You can't ask me for the name of the story. There's another story of Agnon, Imlo Lamala Mizot. That's the other story. That's the story about the guy following the person in the woods or something. He was the rabbi who came late to shul because he would go visit some old lady or something and says, Imlo Lamala Mizot. He's in higher than heaven. I don't remember the whole story.
But it's a parrot story. It's not Agnon.
Oh, that's a parrot story. Okay, I'm sorry. He's buried in the cemetery in Warsaw, Peretz, the famous cemetery where Rav Chaim is buried, an amazing cemetery. If you've ever been to Warsaw, there are 300,000 Jews buried there. Everybody's buried there. Potpourri of Jewish history. Anyways, okay, I got to go and teach. I do have to leave. It's exam, so I can be there 5 minutes later today. But anyway, great job. Yes, very quickly, because I do have to leave. I'm sorry. Any question you want to ask something quickly?
I just wanted to say I was very fortunate and I grew up in a home where we spoke Yiddish.
I wish I knew Yiddish. My father used to yell at me what kind of home I grew up that I did.
Months ago, actually, I listen to one of the rubs.
I unfortunately don't know Yiddish. My parents are Canadian, whatever. My father spoke to my grandmother in Yiddish, but she lived in New York. I mean, my father's sort of mother tongue was Yiddish, but I don't know any Yiddish, unfortunately. What can I sell you? Okay, I don't know any French either. Don't know too much French. A little French, but it's another. Okay, anyways, want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. Please, God, we'll see you next week and through all the learning next week. And And please invite a friend, and everybody be well. We should hear good things. Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you so much.
Shabbat Shalom.